Get ready for a deep dive, folks. This time we're tracing the steps of the Farndale family. And let me tell you, this chronicle you've uncovered is like a treasure map through history. It's amazing how we can follow their lives, like watching a play unfold across centuries.
I know, right? It's especially interesting to see how this family, rooted in Yorkshire, ended up with branches all over Britain. It gives us a unique look at migration within the country, especially during those times when society was changing rapidly.
Absolutely. The source mainly focuses on Yorkshire, but then Act 20 swoops in and it's like hitting fast forward. It even cheekily calls them the Southerners. We're talking about those Farndales who headed south, mainly during the Victorian era when, you know, Britain was transforming like crazy.
Exactly. That whole Victorian period was a whirlwind, right? The Industrial Revolution was turning everything upside down, changing the economy, changing society. So naturally, people started moving around, often from the countryside to these booming cities, all hoping for a better life.
It's mind-blowing how these huge historical shifts affected people's lives on a personal level. For instance, we see early Farndales popping up in Surrey and Sussex, going as far back as the 15th century. There's even mention of a Robert Farndale, a rector in Sussex, in the 1500s. Now, the source isn't entirely sure how he connects to the main family, but you can't help but wonder what made him go south so early on.
Well, considering he was a rector, his work in the church was probably a big factor. Back then, clergymen moved around a lot to serve different areas, sometimes looking for better positions or, you know, answering a call to help a new community.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, let's jump a few centuries ahead, and what do we find? London, of course. Act 20, Scene 2, really paints a picture of how London drew in all these Farndales during the 19th and 20th centuries, like moths to a bright, if slightly chaotic, flame.
And just like moths, they had all sorts of experiences. During that time, London was becoming this global giant, attracting people from all walks of life. Everyone was chasing a dream in this rapidly changing world.
And the variety of those dreams. We meet Robert, who starts as a gardener in Putney, then becomes a carpenter. Then there's John, who serves in those fancy grenadier guards before becoming a clerk. It just shows you the range of experiences, even within one family.
It also gives us a glimpse into how complicated social mobility was back then. Moving from gardener to carpenter, that might have been seen as moving up in the world. But a soldier becoming a clerk? Maybe not so much. It highlights the unspoken rules of society and how people's paths were shaped by more than just money.
Such a good point. And speaking of unique paths, this is where things get really interesting. Among these London newcomers, we find a real gem. Samuel Farndale, the first comedian of the family. Act 20, Scene 4 really puts the spotlight on him, and I have a feeling his story is going to be a wild ride.
Just the title of that section got my attention. A comedian in the family. What a change from the usual jobs we've seen so far. It suggests a very different kind of life and gives us a peek into the growing world of entertainment in the Victorian era.
Exactly. The source mentions that Samuel polished his comedy routine at local gatherings. Apparently, people loved him. It even includes snippets of how the audience reacted, saying he brought the house down with his witty songs and observations.
It just goes to show you that even in those days, which we often think of as quite strict, people craved laughter and entertainment. They wanted to escape, to have fun and feel connected. And it sounds like Samuel really gave them that.
He certainly did. And speaking of brilliant, we can't forget the names of some of his most famous acts. Quite English, you know, and Mrs. Mulligan's Homemade Pie. I mean, who wouldn't want to hear those?
Mrs. Mulligan's Homemade Pie. Now, that's a title that sparks the imagination. It makes you wonder about the stories behind these songs, the characters he created, the social commentary, the humor that really clicked with the Victorian audience.
You know what I find really interesting about Samuel's story?
Yeah, tell me.
Well, it says here that he eventually moved on from comedy to something a bit more, let's say, respectable.
Oh, that's a twist. Do tell.
Apparently, he ended up as a clerk in Portsea. And get this, he later landed a job as a clerk to the Admiralty in London. Quite a change of scenery, wouldn't you say?
Definitely unexpected. It makes you think about all those social pressures back then. Did Samuel switch careers for more money? Or maybe because being a clerk was seen as more, well, acceptable in Victorian society?
Such good questions. And the source even hints at a family connection to law enforcement. Samuel's uncle was a chief constable, and his brother followed in those footsteps. It makes you wonder if that family history played a role in his career choices.
Oh, absolutely. Family legacies and expectations carried a lot of weight, especially in that era.
For sure. But don't worry, the comedic spark didn't die out completely. Samuel's son, Michael Anthony Farndale, picks up the torch generations later, finding his own place on the stage. Seems entertainment might be in the Farndale blood after all.
Fascinating how that echoes down the family line. A story for another deep dive, perhaps.
You bet. We wouldn't want to get ahead of ourselves. But speaking of different paths, let's shift gears to Act 20, Scene 3. We're off to Norwich to meet a whole new set of Farndales. This time, we're trading the London bustle for, well, mustard fields.
Ah, yes, the Norwich Farndales. Quite a bunch indeed.
We start with William, a gardener who moves his family to Norwich. He even becomes a judge for gardening competitions. Talk about an eye for prize-winning bloom.
A testament to his green thumb, for sure. But then his son Herbert takes a very different turn, becoming a, wait for it, mustard packer.
Mustard packing. Now that's an unexpected career choice.
And not just any mustard packer, mind you. Herbert worked for Coleman's, a household name in mustard back then.
Coleman's? Weren't they like the mustard king at the time?
Precisely. Norwich was a major hub for mustard production, and Coleman's was leading the charge. Herbert being a part of that gives us a glimpse into the economic heart of the region at the time.
It's remarkable how these seemingly small details can suddenly unlock a whole new understanding of history. We're not just talking about Herbert and his mustard. We're talking about a vital industry that shaped Norwich's economy.
Exactly. It reminds us that history isn't just about the big picture. It's about the lives of everyday people, like Herbert, playing their part in the world.
You know, as we go through the lives of all these Farndales, I'm noticing some jobs pop up again and again. Gardeners, clerks, military service. Makes you wonder if those were like the main options for folks migrating back then.
That's a sharp observation.
Yeah.
Now, we can't make hearty fast rules based on a few examples, but it's very possible those jobs reflect what was available in Victorian England, especially for those moving from rural areas to the cities.
It really gets you thinking about the choices they faced, the hopes they carried with them as they navigated a world that was changing so fast.
Absolutely. Each move, each new job, it's a story of ambition, of adaptation, of that constant search for a better life. Think about it, right? These growing cities needed gardeners for all those parts and fancy estates. They needed clerks to handle the mountains of paperwork, keep businesses and the government running. And then there's the military, always there, offering a chance to serve, but also with its own risks, of course.
And don't forget about those London wages everyone was after. Even if the work was tough, the promise of a better income, well, that must have been a huge draw for families. It's like each Farndale was taking a leap of faith, weighing their options and hoping for the best.
Absolutely. And their journeys weren't limited to London either. Act 20 takes us to other parts of southern England. There's William, a Farndale, who becomes a butler in a grand house in Wales. Can you imagine the stories he could tell, being right there among the upper class? We also see families putting down roots in Cambridge, Leicester, even Nottingham. Each move is a testament to their drive, their ability to adapt, their constant pursuit of a brighter future.
It's inspiring, isn't it? These Farndales, leaving their familiar Yorkshire behind, embracing new possibilities, facing those challenges head on, it really makes you appreciate the resilience of people, that deep down desire to build a better life, not just for themselves, but for their children too.
And it sparks a curiosity. Did they stay in touch with their relatives back in Yorkshire? Did they share stories of their new lives, the good and the bad? It makes you think about the lasting power of family, how it stretches across generations and distance.
As we wrap up our deep dive into the lives of these Southerners, I'm struck by a sense of awe. They're not just names in a book anymore. They're real people who made real choices, their lives echoing through history. We may never know their whole stories, but the glimpses we have, they offer such a valuable window into not just one family's experience, but into the forces that shaped Britain itself.
It really makes you wonder, you know, how did their choices ripple down through time? What stories would their descendants tell? What would they think looking back at their ancestors' journeys?
What a thought-provoking question to end on. It leaves us with so much more to uncover, more threads to follow in this intricate tapestry of the Farndale family. Until next time, keep exploring.